기자의 방금 BTRT 기자의 사무관의 작품을 기자의 노래로 뵙는다. All glorious to some of the devotees. All glorious to some of the devotees. All glorious to some of the devotees. All glorious to Sri Guru and Sri Guru. Not only Vishnu Pranaya Krishna the Son of the Day, Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Kanamana Namaste Sosa Devam Gaura Vandachana Yivashishi Shingvani Paskata Deshita. Hare Krishna. We also extend a welcome to any new guests today. I'm so happy everybody's here. We have a nice rainy day. The advantage is that it keeps people a little bit more inside the temple room. I want to also offer my best wishes, congratulations, and thanks for the Kishore Yatra devotees that are going out today with all of our young ladies from this area and, as we said, all around the country and even the world. Of course, I'm losing two daughters, a son-in-law, and a granddaughter, all going out. So we're very happy to see them continuing this wonderful preaching with the young people. Okay, we're going to read Bhagavad Gita 3:27. I'll just read it through. Prakrite kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvasya ahankara vimurhatma kartaha nityamanyate. Translation purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. The spirit soul, bewildered by the influence of false ego, thinks himself the doer of activities that are in actuality carried out by the three modes of material nature. In Srila Prabhupada's purport, two persons, one in Krishna consciousness and the other in material consciousness, working on the same level, may appear to be working on the same platform, but there is a wide gulf of difference in their respective positions. The person in material consciousness is convinced by false ego that he is the doer of everything. He does not know that the mechanism of the body is produced by material nature, which works under the supervision of the Supreme Lord. The materialistic person has no knowledge that ultimately he is under the control of Krishna. The person in false ego takes all credit for doing everything independently, and that is the symptom of his nescience. He does not know that this gross and subtle body is the creation of material nature under the order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and as such, his bodily and mental activities should be engaged in the service of Krishna in Krishna consciousness. The ignorant man forgets that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is known as Rishikesh, or the master of the senses of the material body, for due to his long misuse of the senses and sense gratification, he is factually bewildered by the false ego, which makes him forget his eternal relationship with Krishna. Vanshagopatrabhyascha kripasindhubhyevacha patitano bhavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. Jaya Prabhupada. Very nice purport here where Srila Prabhupada describes two persons. They appear to be doing the same activity. They may look very much alike. Sometimes in some lectures, Srila Prabhupada has given an example even of two people working on an assembly line in a factory, doing the same work. But there's a difference. The difference is consciousness. One is in Krishna consciousness and one is in material consciousness. The one thinks that he is the doer. He is responsible for the activities. Everything is going on according to his desire, his direction, according to his own activity, to his endeavor. And therefore, whatever the results of that work are his to enjoy, or to suffer, as the case may be. But the other person who is in spiritual consciousness, or God consciousness, he knows that Krishna, God, is the actual doer. And as has been described in this verse in purport, God, through his agency of material nature, is actually making everything happen. These bodies, these senses, are all made of the material elements. Even our mind, intelligence, and ego is also a material element, a subtle material element. So everything is coming from these elements, which are, of course, coming from the creation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead through his various instruments. and through his various energies. So the one who knows that everything is coming from God, everything that I have is due to him, everything is actually happening out of his desire and his will and his mercy, therefore that person will offer the results of all of their work to God, to Krishna, for their pleasure. So that's two consciousnesses. And those persons, as we said, may be appearing to be doing the same activity. They'll be very similar. Of course, certain things might be different, but the very same activity can have not only two different motivations and two underlying consciousness behind it, but there's also two different results that come about from those two different degrees of consciousness. The one who is in material consciousness sees the opportunity to try to enjoy the material body, to try to enjoy separately from God, separately from Krishna, you know, to try to do everything on his own. The result? The result is the karmic cycle of life. Many, many lifetimes of action and reaction, according to very mechanistic, materialistic laws of nature. You know, for every action, there is a resultant reaction. These are the laws of karma. And because of those laws of karma, one is gains a new birth, a different birth, life after life, and continues the cycle of samsara. That's one result. The other result of a person who is in spiritual consciousness and Krishna consciousness is that he or she has the opportunity to cultivate knowledge, this wonderful wisdom of the Bhagavad Gita, the Srimad Bhagavatam, and all the Vedic literatures. And through that wisdom, understands one purpose in life, which is to serve Krishna in bhakti, in devotional service. And the result of that, one regains one's pure, original, dormant, spiritual consciousness and eventually returns to the spiritual world in relationship with Krishna. Enjoying pastimes with Krishna in the spiritual world, never having to return and be reborn within this material world. Now, most living entities do not choose that path. As we see most people around us in this material world, they choose to remain separate from God and they stay within this material world. And of course, that choice is there. We all have free will. The jiva, or the spirit soul, the individual self, has free will. Not total free will. We can't do anything. We can't decide to, whatever it might be. You know, Krishna lifted Govardhan Hill. Krishna did so many wonderful activities. We can't do those activities. We can't imitate God. Our free will is not unlimited, but rather it is minute. But still the free will is there. And the free will is there in that we can choose. We have the ability to desire, and based upon that desire, we can choose to serve God, to serve Krishna, or to serve this material energy and try our best to try to enjoy this material world without God. That choice is there. If we did not have that free will, there would be no idea. There'd be no reality of love. We talk about love for God. Love is real, must be willing. I can't threaten you with a weapon and say you have to love me. You say, okay, I love you. Well, that's not love. So God could punish us all. He can threaten us, you'll be damned to hell or something, or, you know, forever if you don't love me. But that's not love. That's fear. Love and fear are quite different. Of course, sometimes it's good to have a little healthy fear of the material energy, you know, and the consequences of our activity, because there is reaction to our different actions and behaviors. So a little bit of fear may be okay. But more advanced is love. More advanced is to have love based upon our free will, which is given freely to the Supreme Personality of Godhead in loving exchange. So that needs to be there. But for most of us, we have been in this material world, life after life, bewildered by the material energy. And because we are here in this material world and we have that bewildering influence of Maya, we tend to forget Krishna, to forget God, and we just continue resuming our ordinary material activities throughout this life and throughout many lifetimes, and forget the real purpose of life, which is spiritual realization. That material energy is very strong. And as we can see, most of the world is covered by that illusion. In Srimad Bhagavatam 8:5:30, the next verse says, no one can overcome the Supreme Personality of Godhead's illusory energy Maya, which is so strong that it bewilders everyone, making one lose the sense to understand the aim of life. So that's the real problem. The problem is we forget what is the aim of life. We forget our purpose. We forget our meaning. We forget the real meaning of what it is about, what is life is for. And that's a great loss. That's a great shame. You know, so many lectures, especially in the beginning, in some of the older lectures of Prabhupada, you hear him so often, time after time, almost like a lot of times at the end of his lecture, he'll repeat, please, you now have this, you know, valuable human form of life. Please do not waste it. Please use it while you have the opportunity. So yes, we don't want to lose the sense to understand the aim of life. And Prabhupada says, in purport to that verse, the external energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead gives all the conditioned souls what appears to be an opportunity to be happy within this material world, appears. But that is Maya. In other words, it is a dream that is never to be fulfilled. So the material energy gives us a promise, but it doesn't keep that promise, does it? The promise is that we can be happy in this material world separate from Krishna. But it's a promise, as Prabhupada said, it is a dream that is never to be fulfilled. It doesn't work that way. It's against God's laws. It's against the laws of nature. So that attempt to find happiness in this material world is always destined for failure. So, bewildered by Maya, by material energy, people do not live this life in preparation for the next life. You have to live your life to prepare for your next life, to prepare for death. That's a reality. That's not being morbid. That's realistic. That's reality. We're all going to die. It's going to happen. We can choose to ignore it and be unprepared and be thrown, you know, by material nature into who knows what, in the next lifetime, next body, or we can be intelligent and we can prepare. Of course, there's a very nice story many of you have heard about the Pandavas and Maharaj Yudhisthira. And the Pandavas were traveling somewhere through the forest, and I think that Yudhisthira sent his brothers one by one to go fetch water. Also, he had to retrieve some sticks of a Brahmin for his fire sacrifice. Anyway, not to get into the details of the story, but the idea is that first Arjuna went, he didn't come back, then he told Bhima, you know, go find your brother, get the water, and come back. He didn't come back. Nakula didn't come back. Sahadeva didn't come back. So finally, Maharaj Yudhisthira goes to search for his four brothers. He comes to a lake, and he sees all four brothers are dead around the side of the lake. And he doesn't know what to do. He's bewildered by this, because these are the most powerful warriors in the universe, at least on the Earth planet at that time. Who could overcome them? Who could overcome Arjuna and Bhima? Anyway, he starts to wade in the water, and he hears a voice. It says, do not come into my water. Do not take my water. You have no right to. And Yudhisthira says, okay, who is it? And there's this crane. He says, this is my water. Well, soon the crane turns into this horrible, huge, ferocious, you know, called a yaksha. And he says, the only way you can take my water is if you answer my questions. And Yudhisthira says, all right, I won't take your water. I'll try to answer your questions. So a long story, but he asked 10 or 12 questions, a number of questions, and Yudhisthira answered all the questions, and eventually, of course, then his brothers are all restored to life. And it turns out that this yaksha was actually Yamaraj, or Dharmaraj, who was actually responsible for, you know, not only is he, you know, the demigod of oversees death in the underworld, but he's also in charge of religious principles. He's Dharmaraj. And, of course, he is Yudhisthira's actual father. So, part of the story was that Yamaraj wanted to see Yudhisthira, his son, and he wanted to test him, and because he heard about what such a pious and wonderful and religious person he was, and he answered all of his questions about religious principles perfectly. Now, the point of the story is the one question that most of us know that's probably the most significant. The one question that Yamaraj asked Yudhisthira is, what is the most wonderful thing in the world? And Yudhisthira said, I was looking this up and there's a little difference in translations. It basically said something like, the most amazing thing is that even though every day one sees countless living entities dying, he still acts and thinks as if he will live forever. And that was the correct answer. We see everybody around us dying. We see our ancestors dying. We see animals, plants, everything. But we think we will not die. Somehow we will be spared of that. And therefore, we don't prepare for that. So it is an amazing thing. It is a very wonderful thing. Of course, our nature is to be eternal. Therefore, it is natural to think that one is eternal. But yet, the fact is that our bodies must die. Now, this causes a real problem. We want to be eternal, we feel intrinsically that we are, because that is our spiritual nature, but yet we see death all around us and our own death that will come. So this creates bewilderment. This creates an issue for devotees. And there's a term that I like that, a devotee came to you the other day and he said, I remember something that you said in a class once about cognitive dissonance, and I've always remembered that. I said, well, that's interesting. That was a long time ago. Well, I looked it up. I gave that class 9 years ago. So that devotee has a phenomenal memory, or something, But it's a psychological term, cognitive dissonance. It means a state shared, it's really by every living entity in material consciousness, is in the state of thinking one, thinking oneself, the body when one is really soul, and how does one, handle that? Anyway, cognitive dissonance means we're confronted with contradictory or disconfirming information. Is a state of tension that occurs whenever a person holds two distinct cognitions, ideas, attitudes, or beliefs that are psychologically inconsistent. And has anyone ever been in that situation where you've got some new information and it was just different from what you believed and it was really hard to accept? Right? Sometimes it happens to us. Maybe when we came to Krishna consciousness, we had certain conceptions of the world, and then it's like, this is like new information, but yet it seemed true, so we have to reconcile this somehow. Of course, one resolution, this is a humorous resolution that somebody gave. They said, the way that we solve this is we find a good reason to support your decision and engage in a determined campaign of self-justification to reduce the unpleasant experience of dissonance. So often we simply try to ignore all evidence and retain original ideas. There's many examples of this. People know that many things are not healthy. People who smoke cigarettes, they read on every cigarette, still that I imagine, I haven't seen a cigarette pack for many years, but they always say something about it causes cancer, it's unhealthy or whatever. So they know that, but yet they enjoy the experience. So there's some cognitive dissonance there, or people overeat or don't exercise. Why? Because they want to enjoy the senses, even though they know these things aren't good for them. What? And so, therefore, there's a rationalization. You say, I really need this to feel good. A little bit won't hurt. I can just do that. My favorite rationalization is I'll start dieting on Monday. That's the one I use. But then something always happens. Anyway, we do these things. We have a long history of freedom, civil rights in America. But yet then we hear stories about, torturing prisoners of war. So how do we reconcile? So, well, it's warfare, they're enemies, the rules don't apply. I'm not just saying one or the other, I'm just saying these are things that cause dissonance. Many people we know love animals. Some people, they love their pets, they're very kind to animals, but yet they eat meat. Well, you can say, well, animals don't have souls. In other words, we develop rationalizations to try to resolve this cognitive dissonance. It's one other related term I wanted to mention. It's called confirmation bias. You ever hear this one? Confirmation bias means the tendency to search for or interpret information in a way that confirms one's own preconceptions. So, if we don't like someone or something, we look for all the evidence that will confirm their bad qualities and ignore anything contradictory that would show that they had good qualities, because we want to confirm the beliefs that we've always had. In spiritual life, we tend to have preconceptions about how the world is, how things are. They're really based upon our sensory evidence, or what we might have learned growing up, or what we've been told. The things, those things may not be true. So we tend to often, many people do, ignore or discount spiritual knowledge, or evidence, or even spiritual experience. That's often discounted because people want to confirm the biases that they have, and this new information might upset their thinking, because it's kind of a dissonance. It's an uncomfortable situation, understand. It makes people a little anxious. They can't reconcile things. So, and of course, the greatest problem that we're talking about is one of death. We know we must die, but the spiritual nature yearns for eternity. Fortunately, we have solutions to solve these problems. And of course, the Bhagavad Gita and the Srimad Bhagavatam give real spiritual knowledge. And we do give these solutions. We can understand that yes, we are within this material body, but we are not the body. We are the eternal spirit soul that inhabits the body. The eternal spirit soul is eternal. It lives forever. It continues on after the death of this particular body. Therefore, yes, this body may eventually get old, get diseased, dwindle, and die, but I do not die. The spirit soul remains. The spirit soul continues. And that spirit soul, if it is in relationship with God, in a relationship of love and devotion and service, continues in the most wonderful and glorious way with Krishna in the spiritual world. So therefore, we're able to reconcile the fact of mortality with our desire to live eternally. It's actually very clear. For the devotee with one of spiritual knowledge, that dissonance is resolved and clarified, and so one is not experiencing that. So we know how to get out of this cycle of birth and death. Bhagavad Gita 8.6 says, Yam yam vapi svanam bhavam prajatante kalevaram tamtamevaiti kuntaya sadhata bhava bhavata. Whatever state of being one remembers me quits his body, O son of Kunti, that state he will attain without fail. Srila Prabhupada says, the process of changing one's nature at the critical moment of death is here explained. The person who at the end of his life quits his body, thinking of Krishna, attains the transcendental nature of the Supreme Lord. How can one die in a proper state of mind? One's thoughts during the course of one's life accumulate to influence one's thought at the moment of death. So this life creates one's next life. If in one's present life one lives in the mode of goodness and thinks of Krishna, it is possible for one to remember Krishna at the end of one's life. So there's no trick, like, you know, I serve God, I serve Krishna my entire life, I do devotional service, and then whoops, I might forget Krishna. No. It's saying, whatever one does during one's life, that will influence the thoughts and consciousness of the time of death. In fact, Prabhupada said that if you would somehow or another forget Krishna, Krishna forces himself into the mind of the devotee. So you will remember him at the time of death. He will be with you. That's a guarantee. And Krishna guarantees it. So, for the devotee, these things become clear. But at the same time, sometimes we also feel a little bit of dissonance. We know we have this knowledge of pure devotional service, but sometimes we might feel that our progress is slow, or we don't have the good qualities we desire, or it's difficult to, you know, we may find there's so many difficulties in executing Krishna consciousness. And so, of course, the normal psychological process is self-justification, blame others. Well, that's that's what persons of material conscience do. Somebody else is responsible for my problems. It's probably all the leaders. They probably did something. You know, anyway. But the more advanced position is obviously to be self-aware and to become humble. It's amazing how humility resolves so many problems. If we simply remain in that humble state of the life, well, what Chaitanya says, one can chant the holy name of the Lord constantly in a humble state of mind. And of course, Lord Brahma's famous prayer, Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 14, I don't have the number down. My dear Lord, one who earnestly waits for you to bestow your causeless mercy upon him, all the while patiently suffering the reactions of his past misdeeds, and offering respectful obeisances within his heart, words, and body, is surely eligible for liberation, for it has become his rightful claim. So even if we have reactions to our past misdeeds, we may experience some difficulty, some suffering, whatever it may be, we understand that we are simply waiting for Krishna's causeless mercy, that he will bestow that upon us. This is the message of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So we expect the mercy of the Lord. It's one of the symptoms of surrender that's given in the Nectar Devotion. We expect that Krishna will always protect us and give us his mercy. But of course, we expect the mercy of the Lord, but we also have to endeavor with determination. There needs to be a little determination in spiritual life. Sometimes you hear people purporting different perspectives on spiritual life or different paths or different, you know, that make it very, very easy. And of course, in one sense, it is easy. What could be easier than chanting Hare Krishna, taking prasadam, chanting and dancing? Really easy process. But yet it's not so cheap that one can do any kind of nonsense and make advancement in spiritual life. So there has to be a little bit of determination to follow a path of sadhana, to follow a path of spiritual life. So in the Nectar of Instruction, verse 3, we hear about three important qualities that devotee must have. Enthusiasm, utsaya, patience, dharyat, and nishchayat, which sometimes is translated as confidence, but it's also translated as determination by Prabhupada sometimes. So a confidence or determination must be there. We see so many examples of determination. Many of you know the story of Lord Ramachandra when he was building the bridge to Lanka, and Hanuman and all the great monkey warriors were throwing the boulders to build the bridge. Then of course the little sparrow comes along and he's pecking away, putting little sands of, you know, grains. And some of the monkeys and bears were laughing at him. What can you do? But Lord Ramachandra said, no, this service is as great as yours. He was showing great determination to do whatever he could. I mean, how he possibly thought he could have put enough sands in the ocean to build a bridge, but he was determined to do it, to try to help. And of course, we know the story of Dhruva Maharaj, who at 5 years old was so determined. He was actually determined to get the kingdom of his father, in fact, the greatest king. He wanted a kingdom greater than his grandfather, who was Lord Brahma. So he was pretty determined for a five-year-old. You know, he wanted to rule the entire universe. And so he became so determined and did such great austerities that Lord Vishnu had to come personally and grant him everything. And of course, once he saw Vishnu, all those material desires faded away and were transformed to pure desires to serve God. But anyway, this determination is a very important quality of the soul, and it's a natural state of the soul. We can develop that determination. Once someone asked Prabhupada, how do we become determined? You become determined by being determined. You know, it's not like a magical thing. You just display some determination and Krishna gives you strength. Krishna gives you more strength and more determination. You know, it takes a little effort. But also our Krishna conscious practice of hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, of chanting the Hare Krishna mantra, the Yuga Dharma, that we are doing Sankirtan Jagya, congregationally chanting the holy names, or chanting on our beads, chanting japa. These things help us to become more and more determined. They strengthen our faith, they strengthen our determination. So this Her world is, as we were saying in the beginning, in need of spiritual education, of spiritual knowledge, because everyone is bewildered. People don't have determination for spiritual knowledge because they're very much illusioned by Maya. They're simply, they don't have the answers. They don't know what is to be done, what is not to be done. They don't know the process of Krishna consciousness. So, those of you who do know, that is your responsibility, to help others to learn about Krishna consciousness and to explain, as Srila Prabhupada did for us, explain how this fits in our life, how we actually bring this process of bhakti, of devotional service, into our lives, you know, how we can offer our food, how we can chant Hare Krishna, how we can read our books. We need to learn these things ourselves and then help others to learn these activities of spiritual knowledge. So we need to organize a little bit. We need to work together. We need to work together to, you know, with our Ratyatra, our Harinam Sankirtan, our book distribution, our Prasadam distribution, which will be, you all be frantically trying to take Prasadam in the rain here, it looks like. So, these things all need to be done. They need to be organized. And when I took initiation of Srila Prabhupada in 1973, in my initiation letter, Srila Prabhupada said to those of us who are getting initiated, since you are all intelligent boys and girls, therefore my request to you is you study the science of Krishna consciousness and solve all the problems of the world. No problem, you know, solve all the problems of the world by systematic propaganda as far as you're able to do it. So Prabhupada showed us how to systematically organized. He showed himself by the way that he translated all these books of the Vedic literatures and helped us to publish these books and have them available to people. So we need to make the effort. It needs to be enthusiastic, it needs to be determined, it needs to be confident, but it also needs to be organized, efficient, and planned to help everybody take to this process of Krishna consciousness. So, thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. So, if there are any, we've got a couple minutes, are there any questions or comments from anybody? Mm-hmm. Oh, pretty good.
Hare Krishna. I believe you are a professional psychologist.
Yes.
So I was wondering whether you think that psychologists can actually help people.
Can psychology actually help people? Boy, that's an interesting question. I'm going to answer it really simply because I thought about it for about 10 years and I could speak for a few hours on it. So I'm going to answer in about two sentences. Psychology is like any material knowledge or science or art. If it's used in Krishna's service, it can be helpful. Just like, is the science of agriculture helpful? Yes, if it helps us to grow things to offer to Krishna. I think psychology, I see it as a way of helping people to remove obstacles to spiritual life. We don't become advanced in spiritual realization through psychological practice. But sometimes we have different difficulties that may be blocking us from fully taking the process of spiritual life. So if it can be worked in conjunction with helping people to understand spiritual life and the importance of it, I think they have to go together. I don't advocate processes that like are separate from Krishna consciousness. I think Krishna consciousness has to be the foundation and has to always be there. Otherwise, I don't see so much value in it.
So generally, most psychologists, they're not really spiritually minded.
Historically, that's true. Historically, they haven't been. And part of it has been this sort of inferiority complex that Collins has had. It wasn't a real science, and we had to show the other scientific disciplines how they were actually scientific, which unfortunately made them more materialistic and more atheistic. Now, that's no longer completely true. There's many, many areas, particularly in the counseling fields and like that, that are, you know, embracing more spiritual principles like that. So you see a wide variety,
But, just like any group, any profession, you know, look at any of the healing professions, you know, there's people who are spiritual and people who are not spiritual. So if a psychologist isn't really, doesn't really believe in the soul, or
the psychology, it's interesting because the concept of the self is a very, very critical concept in psychology. Now, what I've discovered is usually when we talk about the self, we're really talking about more the subtle body. You know, the mind and intelligence and ego. They have this concept of ego as identity. But no, I would say for the most part, they generally don't understand the spiritual nature of the self. And that's a real lacking in most of, I'm not saying all, but in most psychologists, that's a real absence.
Carl Jung, he believes in reincarnation, I believe.
Who does?
Carl Jung. Do they still follow his kind of example or accept him?
There's nothing bad there. Carl Jung is also kind of a racist, so, it's like, prior to the 1930s and 20s in Germany. Well, there's good and bad there. We have to be really careful on what we accept from non-devotees.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for reminding us of the certainty of the temporariness of this world. It's always a reminder that must be had. If we can accept that, and also accept that the soul is eternal, and that Krishna's mercy is always there, and we have lifetimes that we've come through and lifetimes to go, maybe. You said, how are we supposed to move forward with that determination? We have faith that it's eternal, and we have faith that we have plenty of time and Krishna is there for us.
Yeah. The process is more or less guaranteed. There's no loss of diminution. Lord Vasana's prior protection from the standard spirit of how long that will take depends a lot on us. We have that free will, and depending upon our determination and our adherence to practice and our ability to go through the purifying process of sadhana bhakti may determine whether it's one life or two lives. I think there's a little urgency there. Most of us don't want to spend too many lifetimes in this material world. Not that it is such a terrible thing, because one is almost assured of a good birth once you perform devotional service. But at the same time, Prabhupada said, try to get out this lifetime. So that's where determination comes in. That's where the free will comes in. To try to do our best, to try to surrender to Krishna, to advance in Krishna consciousness, but don't accept His mercy. His mercy is there, but we also have to accept it. Prabhupada gave the example of how the rain's coming down now, and the rain is watering all of the nice plants and things, and it's also out on the water in the street. And it's not doing any good on the street, but the rain is there for everything, for everybody. In the same way, Krishna's mercy is there. Sometimes it hits purple soil, and sometimes it's on dry rocks. So we want to become fertile soil for Krishna's mercy. Okay, one
last? Thank you for the very nice class. We were talking about psychology. I have a question there. Where does the 12-step program come from?
That's quite separate from the mission. When he was asking about the 12-step program, one thing I do want to say, though, is they have a very big deal of a higher power of God is very central to their process. It has some value to it that they're going to be incompatible with Krishna consciousness in one sense, because the whole idea, so there's some good ideas there, like the atonement for one's wronging others, if you commit offense to others, that kind of thing.
Bhakti Tirthaswami speaks on extensively in Spiritual World of Five, the 12-step program. In Spiritual World of Five and Four, he speaks about the 12-step program. And he applies it to, because it's for addictions, but we're addicted to...
We're addicted to material sense gratification, right?
Yeah.
Well, thank you. That's a good point. Okay. I think we should end there. All gracious, Lord Papa. Thank you very much. I'm going to go to the next one.